He survived over 7 years of torture in a prison camp. But one rejection can derail us. This is Leaning Toward Wisdom, a podcast. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentra, your host here at Leaning Toward Wisdom. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. This is episode 4015, so go to the website, just look for that episode, and you'll find the show notes. Tell a friend about the podcast. That's the biggest favor I can ask you. Okay, well, the biggest favor I could probably ask you is to leave a review over at iTunes, but it's really difficult and cumbersome, but hey, if you want to do that, I'd greatly appreciate it. It'd be terrific. His name is Jeremiah Denton. He died early this morning. He was 89 years old. You never heard of him? Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to admit it, but I'd never heard of him either. In fact, he was an ex-senator, but that's not really what put him in the news so much. What put him in the news is that during the Vietnam War, he was a U.S. Navy flyer, and he was shot down in July 1965. In fact, as I recall reading about him, he had only been in country, as they said, during the Vietnam War, which was the phrase that the vets used when a person arrived in the war zone. He had been in country for about a month, I think. Or flying in country, shot down July 1965, and he was captured by the North Vietnamese. And for 7.5 years, he suffered as a POW under ridiculously horrible conditions, which included, by the way, being an inmate in that famed Hanoi Hilton. In his book entitled When Hell Was in Session, he wrote, quote, "In the early morning hours, I prayed that I could keep my sanity until they released me. I couldn't even give in to their demands because there were none. It was pure revenge." He talked about them using rope. They would tie rope around their extremities and tighten them to cut off the circulation. In fact, according to the reports, he lost the feeling in his fingertips years and years ago because of all this. He suffered torture. And during an interview, a televised interview that his captors shot in 1966, he blinked the word torture using Morse code. The North Vietnamese weren't aware of it, but the U.S. intelligence community, they got the message and deciphered it and realized that he was sending a message to the U.S. government saying, we're being tortured. For 4 of those 7.5 years, he endured solitary confinement. I mean, come on, as if being in a windowless, nasty, filthy cell and being tortured every day, as though that weren't enough. And now you isolate a person. 4 years. When the war ended, he was released in February of 1973. Well, I'm now interested in reading his book because I don't have any idea how he endured this experience. I realized that there were many other POWs who made it out of Vietnam alive, so he wasn't the only one, but I also know that there were countless others who never made it home. In fact, for many years after the war, there was speculation that many POWs were still being held illegally by the North Vietnamese. I don't know if we'll ever know for certain. Now, I was just getting my driver's license when Denton was released. Well, okay, truth be told, I got my driver's license in May of 1972, but it was during this period of time that, you know, I was 15, 16 years old by the time he got released. Yeah, I'm older than you. And I have vivid memories of the network news devoting almost the entire newscast to the war in Vietnam. Walter Cronkite for CBS, he was far and away the most trusted news anchor in America during this time. Dan Rather and even some other notable journalists of today who are now old heads, they were young men who were in the field giving us those daily reports that we would see on the evening news. And there were body counts. I remember the dreaded body counts. We were told every evening how many Americans had died versus how many North Vietnamese had been killed. It was as though it was some scorecard. Well, it was a scorecard. It was a gruesome and it was a depressing time. I've always been fascinated by the Vietnam War. I've watched documentaries on it. I've read books about it. And I'm sure it's because it was the war of my youth, and it was the first unconventional war. It was unconventional in that the enemy didn't always wear an identifiable uniform, and it was unconventional in that they had all these tunnels, and it was such an intriguing geography. I mean, there was just so much to take in. Bamboo shoot booby traps and just weird, freakish stuff that was very different than the Korean or the World Wars. So much to take in. But that's not the point today. No, today the point is resilience. The point is determination. The point is hope. The point is survival. Okay, maybe not physically. I mean, when I read of his death, lots of questions popped into my mind. How does a person under such duress press on day after day without losing hope? And how did Jeremiah Denton and other POWs survive the beatings and the torture for such a long period of time? Did they use psychological tricks that the rest of us don't know? Were they endowed with some super-duper mental toughness that only a few of us possess? For decades, I've been fascinated about these kinds of things, and it's a bit like, well, I'll tell you what it's like. It's a bit like the pain level difference in people. You know, some people can withstand tremendous pain and not think it's that bad. Other people can get a hangnail and whine as though they're on the brink of death. I mean, what's that all about? I'm a hockey guy. I love hockey. My son loves hockey. And we commonly, and baseball season's fixing to kick in, and I'm fixing to offend you baseball fans, but I hate baseball. My son loves it. But even he will mock at, you know, a baseball player that, you know, they'll pull up lame as they kind of breezily jog to first base. And they can be out for weeks and weeks with some undisclosed injury. You know, a hockey player can get his, practically get an eye ripped out and a few stitches, and, you know, he may miss a shift or two. Why? What's the difference in all this? Well, okay, in that sporting analogy, there's a difference in the culture. The culture of hockey is gut it up, play through it. The culture in professional baseball is you're injured, take time off. Well, Mr. Denton's story of survival, it just brings to the forefront yet one more time, and certainly not the first and certainly not the last time, the power of enduring and grinding it out. And since I'm a business guy, one of the first thoughts I had when I read of his death was how sometimes in our business pursuits, and yes, this is also true in our personal lives, we can let the smallest obstacle foil our success. I mean, the minute we run into our first no, we pack up our bags and quit, thinking, well, nobody's ever going to buy this. Well, just because one person said no doesn't mean that nobody's going to buy it. And it also reminded me of, you know, the horrible statistics on marriage and divorce. A couple encounters some rough patch and immediately it's, hey, this ain't going to work. We're out. It's over. I mean, what happened to that commitment till death do us part? No, we live in a world where We want smooth and we want easy. And if it ain't easy, okay, this is too tough. This is too tough. Well, we don't all do that. Some of us do that. Maybe a lot of us do that, but we don't all do that, because if we all did that, then, well, nobody would be in a marriage for very long. I've been in a marriage for 36 years and counting. No, it hasn't been easy. No, it hasn't all been smooth sailing, but it's what we do. It's who we are. And, you know, there's love and there's commitment. It's not a relationship of mere responsibility. It's a commitment made of love. Our marriage is, but I think in business and in your career, isn't it a commitment made of love? And it could be that you love providing for your family. I know all the passion talk and all that, but sometimes the passion can be not what we do, but for whom we do it. And I think that's huge. And I don't think it gets talked about nearly enough. I think everybody is so selfish and so, I don't know, we are so concerned and so consumed about what we want, and we're so consumed about happiness. And the translation of happiness, by the way, for so many is, I want what I don't have. I don't have location independence. I don't have, you know, this internet freedom lifestyle. I don't have that car. I don't have that house. I don't live in that neighborhood. I'm not able to buy those kinds of clothes. When in reality, well, the minimalists certainly have taught us that's not true. That's fool's gold. But it still is what we chase so often, because that's what we deem, well, that's success. That's success. Well, we don't all pack up our bags and quit at the first sign of trouble, because if we did, then that we wouldn't see anybody succeed. And we clearly see people succeed. The successful among us are not so easily defeated, whether in marriage or whether in a business or whether in a career. But we do know that the successful among us are far fewer than those among us who fail. Well, does the 80-20 rule apply? Probably. I mean, I could easily believe that only 20% of the people who set out to make a go of some business enterprise succeed, while 80% fail. Well, no, I'll go you one better. I'd venture to guess it's more like 90-10. I mean, who knows, really? How can you quantify it? Who cares? Because here's the deal. One man endures 7.5 years of torture in a Vietnamese prison camp, while another guy makes a cold call that results in, no, I'm not interested, and he quits. He can't take it. He can't take it. He can't take it one more time. Not another call. Really? Really? Not another call? One call, one rejection, and you're done? Yep. I'm out. Or maybe a guy knows what his next step might be. Not sure, but he thinks this might be the best next step. But he's stuck. I mean, literally, he can't move. Paralyzed. Unable to take that action, whatever it might be, however big or small it might be. And I wonder, what's he afraid of? I mean, what if the worst case scenario did happen? I mean, would it be 0.0001% as bad as being a POW? No. I mean, there's no comparison at all. I'm a real fan of worst case scenario. Now, I'm a guy, I love to what if it. I mean, if anything, I kind of have to police myself on what ifing something to death. But I learned a long time ago in trying to balance the pros and the cons of a thing, the risks or the rewards of a thing. Most everybody asks the question, what if this fails? What I have found over the years is that very few people answer the question. Well, what if I fail? What if the very next phone call I make, the guy says no? Well, I will have lost whatever time I spent dialing the phone. I mean, that really is about the worst case scenario of it. Well, if that's the worst case scenario, then okay, pick up the phone and dial again. Call somebody else. Yeah, but they're just going to say no. Well, what if they don't? And so we can turn the worst case scenario and flip it on its head and say, but what about the best case scenario? What if the very next phone call you make, they say yes? I mean, we kind of pre-program ourselves for failure, especially if we've experienced it at all. And we've all experienced it. Come on, we've all experienced it. Question, are we too soft? You think we're too soft? Yeah, we probably are. No, we absolutely are. We absolutely are. And getting softer all the time, in my estimation. And listen, I'm not talking about enjoying rejection or pain. I'm not talking about being a masochist. That's a person who enjoys suffering and pain, by the way, for those of you that don't know. Some of those freaks are out there. There are some masochists out there. I don't think that describes most of us. Doesn't describe you, does it? Man, I hope not. I hope my listeners aren't a bunch of masochists. What would that say about me? Nothing good. No, I'm talking about our sheer tolerance for a little bit of pain and suffering. So let me put this in context for you and see if this helps. I'm talking about the pain and the suffering required to improve our condition, our business, our career, our personal life. I'm not talking about enduring it simply because we want to live long enough like Denton did and hope that we can one day regain our freedom. That if we can just hang on long enough, the Marines will come busting through and we'll be free. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about business people. I'm talking about salespeople. I'm talking about leaders. I'm talking about employees. I'm talking about warehouse workers. I'm talking about anybody who is enduring the pain of failure as they try to find success. Well, doesn't that describe us all? I mean, to some degree. You can listen to interviews, you can read interviews with even the most successful people. Well, take Warren Buffett. Is Warren Buffett satisfied? No. Why is Warren Buffett going to work every day? Because he's got work left to do. He's got more success yet to find. He's got new goals and new objectives that he's not yet reached. Okay, compared to me, compared to you, his degree of success, okay, financially, it's insanely higher. But don't you understand that success and failure, as we're talking about it here, it's a relative thing. You think, man, what does he need another $1 million? He doesn't need another $1 billion. But we're all aiming for success, or we're aiming for more success. And as we aim for success, or as we aim for more success, there's some pain and there's some suffering and there's some bad times, bad days, bad months, bad years. And so striving to earn more, to serve more, to do better, and a host of other worthwhile goals, lots of people are taking aim at all of these kinds of things. And they're not all achieving those things, by the way. In fact, most of them are not achieving those things. And many of them are quitting because failure's not fun. But listen, if we let the smallest hurdle stumble us, I mean, then doesn't it appear that we're more committed to failure than success? Now I think we're on to something. I seriously think we're on to something. So we let the very smallest obstacle get in our way and fail us. How then are we more committed to our success than our failure? We're not. We're not, because sometimes we're too committed to failure, even though that failure is what's generating more pain and more suffering. Well, now, wait a minute. I said I hoped you weren't a masochist, but you know what? Come to think of it, maybe you are, not intentionally, because maybe you are too committed to failure, because you're letting failure dictate your next course of action. The phone call, the sales call resulted in a no. And so what is the result for you? I quit. Failure? You're going to let failure rule your life that easily? When meanwhile, an 89-year-old died just today who gave up 7.5 years of his life to a North Vietnamese prison camp. And he didn't come out whole, but he came out okay. And he lived a long, long life. He got out in February of 1973. He died in March, late March of 2014. We can focus on those 7.5 years, or we can focus on all of those intervening years where he was a father and a grandfather. He was a guy who didn't surrender to death in a foreign prison camp. He didn't give up. He endured. I don't know how. I really don't. I mean, come on, we need Freud or some other brainiac to enlighten us, I guess, in the fact that we can sometimes be too committed to our own failure. Or, you know, maybe we can look at the obvious and we can think about our fears and we can think about our suffering and we can decide we want to do something else. We can decide we want to do something different. That's right. We can decide. Oh, a lot of people poo-poo that. A lot of people, you know, they may think, well, that's too new agey. It's not new agey at all. It's basic. It's foundational. It's fundamental. And it's right. Because every day you get up in the morning and you have choices to make. You have choices. What are you going to put on? What are you going to do today? How good your work going to be today? Are you going to do any work today? How are you going to treat people? How are you going to drive on the road? Did you see this YouTube video? This gal, it's had well over 1 million hits, and it's only days old. Some guy in a pickup truck starts tailgating her. She was trying to turn, and he cut her off. And so she instinctively got her smartphone out and launched the video, and I guess as she was driving, just held it up, showing him in right behind her. And he's just absolutely lost his mind. And as he pulls up beside her, she moves her camera to focus in on him. And of course, he flips her off. He gets around her. And the minute he speeds up and he gets around her and he cuts right in front of her and he hits a slick spot. He's in a nice pickup truck. He loses control, fishtails through the median across the other oncoming traffic. Thankfully, there wasn't anybody there, and throws this thing into a ditch. Now, she starts laughing and frankly has the natural reaction I think any of us would have in that, you know, serves you right, I think is what she said. And of course, we're watching this and we're all thinking the same thing, serves him right. Well, police track him down. I guess he drove off, left the scene, and I don't think they arrested him. They might have arrested him, but anyway, they gave him citations for various and sundry things. And of course, now the guy's a YouTube star for being a flaming jerk. One of the comments I think that the lady made to a news team was she hoped that he would use this as a learning lesson and just, you know, learn to decide to behave differently And there it is again. You know, it's that decide. And don't we decide? Now, I live in a big city in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, and there's a lot of traffic. And, you know, road rage is pretty common, just pretty common. And people can decide. They can decide if they're going to be road ragey or not, if they're just going to calm down or not. You know, people get involved in arguments and shouting matches and all kinds of poor behavior. It's a decision. It's a decision. Everything that we do that is of our own volition, I'm not talking about things that happen to us, because sometimes things do happen to us. Health occurrences, somebody runs a stop sign and hits us, we've not done anything. But boy, more often than not, the troubles are troubles that we make, troubles that we bring on, and troubles that we bring on because we didn't make the right decision up front. Mr. Denton made the right decision. He made the right decision that he would not be broken, that he would endure. I'm not saying he didn't have some special tricks and techniques. I'm going to have to read the book and find out. I'm betting that he did. And you know what? I'm betting that going in, he didn't have a clue, but I'm betting that along the way, over the course of 7.5 years, he figured it out. I'm betting that he realized that there were certain things that he could do to cling to his own sanity. And I'm betting that he figured out that some things worked better than other things, and he did more of the better things, and he stopped doing the things that were less effective. And you know what? How is that different for us? No, we're not under the present distress of a prison camp, thankfully, but we've got our own stresses and we've got our own anxieties and we've got our own pain and our own suffering. Why not behave like I'm venturing to guess he behaved? Why not venture out to try to tackle our problem, our situation, in ways that we know can make it better? And if some things don't work, we stop doing that and we try something else and we try something else until we ultimately and eventually we figure it out. And until we ultimately and eventually become a success. You know about them. You've read about them. You've seen stories after story after story about them. The overnight success that took 10 years. Maybe you're in a funk. Maybe you've been in a funk for weeks, months, years. You've not been in a prison camp for 7.5. So buck it up. Buck it up. Start trying to figure it out. And if what you're doing right now is not working, do something different. You decide. That's the great thing. We live in a world where most of us are free. And we can make our own decisions. We can do what we want. Within reason. Then do that. Take advantage of that. Make the most of that. Hey, it's Leaning Toward Wisdom, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Put your shoulder into it and lean hard. Yeah, okay, go back to episode 4014 and you'll realize I leaned in too hard. I've still got shoulder issues, so going back to the doctor on Tuesday. Not that you care, but that's my pain and suffering right now, and I'm having to just gut it up and endure it until we can figure out what in the world is going on with this thing. Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. That's where I'm hailing from. So if you hear any accent, it's either that or Louisiana. LeaningTowardWisdom.com is the website. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. Again, yeah, it'd be great if you'd leave me a review. That'd be awesome. But tell a friend. At least tell a friend about it. Here we just kind of talk about anything and everything that's on my mind. If you've got something on your mind, let me know. Reach out to me through social media or any other methodology that you choose, all kinds of ways to reach me, contact forms over at the website and all that good stuff. My name is Randy Cantrell. This is the L Studio.